Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Joining us right now, former major leaguer, former world champion on the 09 Yankee team. Now he's on TV. And he's also a Michael Jordan historian, so very multi-talented guy. And that is Jerry Hairston Jr. Jerry, Joe, and Evan here in New York. How are you?
Jerry, how are you?
Well, thanks for having me, guys.
So as a Jordan historian, here's my first question about this Last Dance, which obviously we're all glued to. What did you not like about it? Was there something that you said, boy, they should have done more on this, or they left this out? As a Jordan historian, we start with the negative. What did you not like about The Last Dance?
I wish they had cameras when Jordan went to go get Dennis Rodman in Vegas. They should have had visual cameras, grab him out of the hotel room, drag him out, and bring him back to the team. That would have been a great story to see. But other than that, I love that they touched on everything. The one thing I appreciated, you know, Michael Jordan allowed them to really see everything, touch on his gambling, touch on the reason why he left basketball to go pursue another dream of his, to try to make it to the big leagues and play baseball. So I love that they were able to touch on every facet of everything. So the one thing that Michael Jordan has always been, he's been very, I'm not going to say open. He was not been open, but kind of like, hey, this is who I am, take it or leave it. And he showed that in this documentary.
Do you buy that it was a bad pizza from some pizza place in Utah? That's how he got sick for that game against the Jazz. Do you buy that story or not?
I knew that story years ago, guys. I knew it was food poisoning. Mr. Reinsdorf owns the Chicago Bulls. He also owns the Chicago White Sox. My father has been in that organization for years. He had just retired. My father did. So that story, the food poisoning, has been around. Either way, food poisoning or flu, for him to get up and play that game and play well and to win that game for the Bulls, a critical game five, just shows his moxie and his will to win. And I think Scottie Pippen said it best in the documentary. This guy just wanted to win more than everybody. So whether it's food poisoning, I knew it was food poisoning long ago. I think it's worse than the flu. I've had both. I've had the flu and food poisoning. I had food poisoning on a cruise. And that was the worst thing I've ever experienced. For him to play a game and not just play a game, you know, being poisoned and play well and win that critical game five just goes to show why he's the greatest of all time.
So, but you don't buy that maybe he flew to Vegas between games and was partying and that's how he got it.
No, there's so many rumors when it comes to Jordan. He didn't shy away that he went to Atlantic City with his father to gamble when he was down 2-0.
Thanks for the memory, Jerry. Thank you. Yes. No, I know.
But here's the thing. Let's say he was hungover. You know, just for the sake of this, that's impressive too. I mean, listen, we've all been hungover.
He was hungover. Yeah. I mean, it is impressive.
I mean, either way,
that doesn't take away from it.
No doubt. Right. Either way, he was sick and he played well.
Listen, guys, the one thing that I've never heard from Michael Jordan ever, you know, we talk about his competitive problems, you know, the gambling. Remember, he's a billionaire, you know, so 20 grand, 50 grand, 75 grand, a golf match, that's nothing to him. That's like $20 to him.
Right.
Never has anybody said he had a drinking problem, ever. You know, now obviously he likes the party when they win and they celebrate. But, you know, the way he was a fine-tuned athlete, I mean, he ran as much on the court offensively as well as defensively. I mean, he was just an insane competitor. Never have I heard he ever had a drinking problem. So that's never been an issue.
Well, I didn't think I'm not alluding to to the fact that he might have had a drinking problem. I just think he might have went – who knows if he didn't go to Vegas just to go gamble and have a little – have some fun. I mean, that doesn't seem to be the realm.
You know what I think was tough for me and Joe to buy? Not that he had food poisoning or the flu, or if it is food poisoning. They kind of alluded to the fact that they think he was poisoned on purpose.
Right.
I mean, the whole idea,
that.
The five guys showed up with the pizza.
Right.
The security guy was concerned something fishy's going on. They didn't say it, but they basically walked you up to the line to allude to the fact that they think it was done on purpose.
You guys got to remember, Utah, especially where at that time in the mid to late 90s, it's not like New York City or Chicago.
No, I understand that. Right,
where
right.
You get food at any time, you know, or even room service. Room service stopped at 9 o'clock, you know. So they just were at the mercy of that particular pizza place. And, you know, Tim Grover has been an upfront guy. And for him to tell that story is kind of what I heard maybe about 10, 12 years ago. So it's pretty spot on.
You know, what jumps out, again, we're talking to Jerry Harrison Jr., who's a very big Michael Jordan guy here. And full disclosure, I'm a lifelong Knicks fan, Jerry, so I got no love for Michael Jordan. I mean, I got great respect, but he destroyed my team, you know, time and time again. So I don't have any great love for him, but I have great respect. But here's one thing that kind of jumped out for me with Jordan. Man, it was like he never, ever gave a compliment to anybody saying, well, you know, this guy was a tough opponent or this guy gave me trouble defensively. There was none of that. I mean, like, never did he ever say that about anybody. How about that, Jerry?
Well, you got to remember, you got to kind of read between the lines. Jordan is the ultimate competitor, and I think he never wanted to give a player an edge. Now, talking about Isaiah Thomas. He said everything about Isaiah. He hated him. He still hates him to this day. But he gave him the ultimate compliment. He said, Magic Johnson is the greatest point guard of all time, and right behind Magic is Isaiah Thomas. So he gave a person that he hates to this day the ultimate praise, the ultimate compliment, you know, calling Isaiah the second greatest point guard of all time. So the one thing I took out of this document, and I, you know, especially in today's day, I get free agents in all sports. Play, and I'm for the player. You get up and go, and if you want to go play at another place, great. But during the times that he lost to the Pistons in those early years, he had the youngest team in the NBA at that time, okay? He didn't leave to go team up with Patrick Ewing in New York or bring Charles Barkley in or go play with Magic Johnson. He stayed and developed Scottie Pippen. He made Scottie Pippen, Horace Grant, and all those young players work out with him. And to me, that's leadership right there. You know, he didn't say, hey, go trade these guys away and give me some other guys to help me. He took what he got, and he made these guys better players. Now, was it with an iron fist? Absolutely. But you got to remember, in that time, that's how life was back then. You had to be strong. You had to be tough. These guys were getting beat up by the Knicks. They were getting beat up by the Celtics and really getting beat up by the Pistons. So these guys not only had to be physically tough, they had to be mentally tough. And Michael Jordan made sure that these guys were ready. And that's what I take from it. This guy developed these guys into champions. And that's why I think he's one of the greatest athletes of all time, definitely the greatest basketball player of all time.
Now, connecting the two, because you had a long baseball career. I remember you're on the Orioles for a bunch of years, and obviously a short stay with the Yankees in 09. You got a pretty ring for it, which was, I'm sure, a highlight of your career, being on the Yankees and winning a championship. Your teammates with Derek Jeter, you were teammates with Cal Ripken. We've heard so many Jordan-Jeter comparisons. As a fan, I can only say this as a fan, they don't really feel similar at all. You obviously got to be a teammate of Jeter, know a lot about Michael. Are there a lot of similarities from what you saw between Jordan and Jeter, the teammate?
They were insanely competitive. They were routine oriented. You know, I know Jeter had to have his music right before he went out to the field to play a game. He had to have his Michael Jackson song on. He'd yell at me. He'd yell at Nick Swisher, "Hey, put that song on." You know, I think it was the "Girl Is Mine." He had to hear that song before he went out into the field to be ready for a game. He was insanely competitive. And the one thing I would say that Jeter and Jordan are similar. I would take my ground balls, you know, when I didn't start, and Derek always had me take ground balls with him at the end of his round before every game, and he'd be in my ear saying, "Hey, postseason baseball, you're going to have an opportunity, whether offensively or defensively. Can you handle that? Everybody's going to be on you. All eyes will be on you. Millions of people will be watching on TV. Can you handle that pressure?" He would talk to me 3 or 4 or 5 times a week while we take ground balls, talking about what postseason baseball would be like, and kind of pumped me up a little bit. So when I got that at bat, I was mentally prepared. Okay, so that's very similar to the way Michael Jordan treated, let's say, Scott Burrell or Steve Kerr, making these guys understand that, listen, I may be a little harder than you right now. That way, you will be ready for the pressure of the postseason. So in that aspect, Jeter and Jordan are very similar.
Talking to Jerry Hairston Jr. Jerry, let's talk about the baseball right now. And they just came out with, I guess, 67 rules, a 67-page thing on all the different safety features and all the different things they're going to do if they start the major league season again. If you were a major league player going into this season, what would you be thinking? Would you be a little apprehensive about wanting to play this year? What about that, Jerry?
Well, I think those are guidelines. They're not laws. So if somebody were to do something by accident, you're going to be fined $10,000. It's not like that, okay? It's just these are guidelines. Remember, this is just a proposal they sent over to the players, okay? And the players can veto certain things. They can figure out a way to say, "Hey, this is good, this is not," to make sure everybody is safe. And if I'm a player, I want to play, man. I'm paid to perform. I'm paid to be out on the field. Obviously, it's different circumstances, but as a player, you understand what baseball means to these fans, especially what's going on in our country, really around the world. And for us to be out on the field, even if there's no fans in the stands, it'll give a glimmer of hope and let everybody know, hey, we're starting to get down the line where hopefully we'll be some normalcy, you know, really soon. I just saw the governor of California has just made a statement that quite possibly stadiums will be opened up in June to make sure these guys will be out there playing in, you know, NBA or Major League Baseball or any sport. Right. And I think Texas just said the same thing a couple hours ago. So we're starting to see the country open up. And I know Major League Baseball, the NBA, the National Football League will do everything they can to keep these players safe.
Is any of those things, and it may seem stupid to us, but I can understand it, your routine, you're playing a game, you're playing baseball sport you've played your whole life, are any of these rules difficult to kind of follow? And you mentioned, let me rephrase it, not rules, but guidelines. They don't want you spitting. If you spit, I doubt they're going to take you off in handcuffs or anything like that. But of all the things that they're trying to institute for safety, are there some that jump out at you where you say, boy, that one, that's going to be rough? You know, well, not being able to take a shower is going to be rough. Anything that jumps out?
You mentioned spitting, okay? Yes. If I'm shortstop and I'm by myself, you mean I can't spit? Remember, baseball is a sport. You can social distance. It's not like the NBA where you're guarding somebody in a guy's face and leaning on this person, or the NFL where you're tackling a guy. In baseball, you're social distancing. You're in center field, at shortstop. So you're in your little own little element. So I think it'll be a whole lot easier to play the game of baseball than the other sports. So I'm sure a couple of these things that are in the guidelines, they'll be a little lax with.
What about no fans, Jerry? You think that is going to make a difference at all to the players?
I think it'll make a little bit of a difference, but do what Korea's doing right now. They're able to have dolls and all sorts of cardboard cutouts and pumping in crowd noise. I think that'd be kind of cool. You know what I'm saying?
Really?
At least you have that. Well, hold on a second. Now, obviously, it's not going to take place of the fans. But at least you're trying to do something to make it somewhat normal. And the Korean baseball players aren't having a problem with it. And you know, and you're in the batter's box, when you're facing that major league pitcher, everything's quiet anyway. You know what I'm saying? It's the buildup when you walk up to the plate. You might hear the crowd noise, but as that pitcher's in his windup, everything goes silent anyway. So, listen, it's not the norm. You're trying to make do and just trying to get through this season, provide entertainment for the fans, and get out there and play some baseball. And hopefully next year, we'll be back to normal.
Is there because one of the perks potentially of there being no crowd, even though there's no perk, it's going to stink, is that we're going to hear so much of what's said on the field. Is a lot said on the field during the course of a game?
I think you could hear a lot of guys from the dugout. I know I was a chatterbox in the dugout, you know, yelling at the other team, and always in good fun. You know, if Tim Lincecum was on the mound, I'll be yelling at him, telling him, get a haircut, hippie. You know, or,
really?
That's what you scream at? I do that all the time. Laugh. But, you know, there's a lot of trash talking that goes on from the dugout to the opposing pitcher, from the dugout to the opposing batter. So I think that would be kind of cool and a unique experience. If I'm a player, I would treat this like The Sandlot. You know, The Sandlot's one of the best movies of all time, especially one of the best baseball movies of all time. You know, treat it that way. You know, a little bit old school. You go back to your AAU days when only your parents were in the stands and maybe your girlfriend was in the stands. You're playing Major League Baseball and providing entertainment for millions on TV, so I'd have fun with it.
I have a vague memory, and you'd probably have a much more specific memory because maybe you saw your life flash before your eyes, but I remember Roger Clemens coming way up and in on you. Like, I think he threw a fastball right at your head. I don't think it hit you, but I remember you diving out of the way. Did that happen because you were screaming something at Roger Clemens?
I don't know if you guys remember this. When I first came up to the big leagues, listen, guys, I'm not the biggest guy. I'm not the strongest guy. I had to play with a certain grit, and, you know, similar to Dustin Pedroia, but Dustin Pedroia was a whole lot better player than I was. But we had to play with that type of style. And it rubbed some of the players the wrong way. And I totally get it. I understand. And it rubbed Roger Clemens the wrong way. I had some success against Roger. I remember I went 3-for-3 against him in Baltimore.
Wow.
I remember got a hit and – you know, got an RBI, and then he got taken out of the game, and I was at first base. He kind of glared at me a little bit, upset, because he's walking off the mound. And then I remember he's going to probably make a note of that, and he may come up and in on me, you know, in his next start, and he did. In New York, he came up. I think went past my dugout. I'll tell you a quick story.
Yeah.
After that happened, he went past my head, and I ended up flying out. And he muttered something. I may have said something under my breath as well. You know, oh, well. The next series, we play the New York Mets, and Mike Piazza was watching that game. And I came up to the plate, and Mike Piazza let me know, he said, "Hey, bro, I saw what happened last night. Trust me, I'm going to get this guy for you. I'm going to get this guy for you." He was ticked, and I would rather see Mike Piazza and Roger Clemens go at it as opposed to me and Roger Clemens go at it. Hey, listen, I can throw hands. I got some boxing skills, but I like to stay in my weight class.
That's funny.
You're right. That is funny.
Yeah, well, we have no love lost for Roger Clemens, by the way, Jerry.
No.
We're with you.
No love for Roger Clemens, that's for sure. Well, what'd you think about what Blake Snell had to say about this whole thing? I mean, that really did not come off very well by him, Jerry. How about that?
Yeah, it's unfortunate, and I get let me word this correctly. I understand where he's coming from, but you cannot make that public, especially what's going on right now. We have millions of people that are hurting financially. A lot of these people have lost their jobs, and a lot of these people don't know when the next paycheck is going to come in or come from. So when we start talking about money, I don't care if it's Major League Baseball, the NFL, or the NBA, you should not talk about money. If you're going to talk about money, do it behind closed doors and negotiate that way, because people, especially the fans, do not want to hear billionaires and millionaires cry about money.
No question.
They understand it. They understand it's a business, but you cannot be talking about that money aspect of what's going on right now and don't make it public.
A little bit on that 09 team. So you're traded there right at July 31st and served an important role off the bench. Remember, you sparked a rally in game two, that 13-inning game that ended on the error. What was your reaction? You know, when you get the news, all right, you're going to the Yankees right at the trade deadline in 09.
Well, I was having a pretty good season, and my agent, Casey Close, he lives in New York, he was telling me for about 3 or 4 days, hey, you're going to get traded, and I think you're going to go to the Minnesota Twins. At that time, I did not want to go to the Minnesota Twins. I love Cincinnati. I was playing under Dusty Baker. I started to play a whole lot more, and I was comfortable with that team. And out of the blue, right at the deadline, Dusty Baker calls me in. He goes, hey, we had to trade you. We traded you to the New York Yankees. I was shocked at first, but I was extremely excited because I knew the Yankees were the best team in all of baseball at that time. So I was excited. I met the team in Chicago, my hometown. And as soon as I got to the clubhouse, I was there early, probably around 1 or 1:30. Mariano Rivera was there, and he came over to me, and he said, welcome home. And that really put me at ease to have a guy like Mariano Rivera with his track record. Now he's a Hall of Famer. We knew that even then.
Sure.
For him to say that, that made me comfortable. I knew Derek, having the same agents, playing against each other for so many years. He welcomed me with open arms. All those guys, man, treated me like I was there from the very beginning. And they always wanted me to be comfortable. They made it a lot easier transition for me, you know, coming up mid-season, you know, via trade. And it was one of the best group of guys I've ever been around. And I loved that team. We had a blast. A lot of guys were superstars. Alex Rodriguez, Derek Jeter, Johnny Damon, CC Moe. But the one thing that I learned in watching this Bulls documentary, everybody had one goal. I don't care if you're the 25th man or the superstar. It was to win. It ain't about coming in second place. We don't care about that. It's find a way to get it done. If you don't win, you're not going to be remembered. And Derek, Alex, all those guys stressed that constantly. We had to finish the job. Nobody cared about regular season wins. Everybody talks about the Warriors winning 73, whatever. Nobody cares about that. It's about finishing the job and winning a championship, and we were able to get it done.
So you had no – the transition to New York for you was seamless because of all that, right? You never had that, like, moment, wow, I'm coming to New York. You didn't have that.
No, I did. You know, I played in the AL East for so many years. So I played in the old Yankee Stadium.
Right,
I played with Cal Ripken. I played with Sammy Sosa. I played with so many superstars, Ken Griffey Jr. So I was never really starstruck. I understood no matter what, I was there to do a job, and that's to win. Whether they want me to play a little shortstop or third base to spell the superstars or play a little outfield to make sure Johnny Damon gets a rest or two, I didn't care. My job was to help Derek Jeter, help his legacy, help Mariano Rivera's legacy, because I knew I'm not going to have a legacy. Nobody cares about me, but it was my job to make sure I helped those guys finish that job of winning another championship.
Talking to Jerry Hairston Jr., there's a reason I'm going to ask this question, and Joe will laugh as soon as I ask it. Albert Bell was your teammate for a couple of years. And the reason we bring it up, Jerry,
yes,
is we think Albert Bell is an all-time great who's been forgotten about, should be in the Hall of Fame.
And really, and not only that, he got hosed. I mean, this guy got hosed out of the MVP in 1995. I mean, you know, and to me, he's not in the Hall of Fame because the writers didn't like him. That, to me, is the answer.
So what do you think of him? You're a young player playing with him, veteran star. What was Albert Bell like?
I loved playing with Albert Bell. He was one of my favorite teammates. You talk about how Michael Jordan treated Scott Burrell. Albert Bell treated me the same way, and I loved it. I'll tell you a quick story. Albert Bell knew my dad. You know, okay. So when I was up and down in 99, and he took me to breakfast in Boston. We were going to play the Red Sox. And I remember, like brunch, right before we go to the ballpark, and the check comes, and he wanted me to grab the check and pay because we had the same amount of meal money. He was the highest paid player in Major League Baseball. He was trying to get me to pay the check. So I picked up the check and I threw it at him, and he started laughing. But he treated me that way. I had to get a Starbucks coffee, make sure it was in his locker all the time. He made me dress for 2 years in a row, you know, the hazing. But he always was on me. He was always wanted to make sure that I was prepared to play. And he knew that the big leagues ain't easy. You're going to have some ups and downs. And to this day, me and Albert Bell are still friends. He lives about 5 miles from me. He has three little girls. A couple of those girls are friends with my daughters. They played on the same soccer team.
Wow.
He's a soccer coach. He is hilarious. I beg him. I tell him, listen, you need to have like a TV show because everybody will see it, because nobody will believe it, you know, because he's the father of three little princesses, three little girls, and he's a great dad. So.
Now, Jerry, I want to stop you here for a second because you are – now, here's something you need to do now, okay? You're tight with Albert Bell. You got to go to Albert Bell and say, look, there's these two guys that do an afternoon show in New York on WFAN from 2 to 6, Joe and Evan. They love you. They've been touting you for the Hall of Fame for you don't know how long, arguing with writers, complaining that you got hosed at the MVP in 1995, complaining that you should be, you know, in all these great years you had, you're one of the great right-hand hitters, that you should be in the Hall of Fame, and we think you've got hosed because, you know, like I said, the writers didn't like you. So you need now, Jerry, to talk to Albert and convince him that he has to come on with us. Can you do that, Jerry?
Guys, listen to this. I have asked him to come on my podcast. It's called Caught Looking. It's free on iTunes. I've asked him a couple of times to come on my podcast. He goes, how much money does it pay? I go, Albert, are you kidding me? It doesn't. I'm not going to pay you to come on. This is to help your case for Hall of Fame to tell everybody what you've been up to. So I will send him the message. I'll even text him right now.
Please do that.
Tell you what, why don't you guys send me a text exactly what you want in it, and I'll send it to Albert.
That seems fair.
He'll respond to me within the hour.
Okay.
We have your. I'm assuming, Jerry, we have your or our producer has your information.
Yeah, sir, Ernie's got it. Yeah.
Ernie, start texting now, Ern. start texting Jerry right now about what we want. You know what we want to say to Albert to have him on.
Okay? It'll be the most kiss-ass thing possible, but it's true. We actually like him. He's a hell of a player.
I love playing Albert, man. He was great. Unbelievable.
Well, Jerry, we really appreciate
you. Before Jerry goes, though, I want to ask you one more thing as a big Bull fan. When after 98, when Reinsdorf, well, actually it was Kraus that breaks up the team, what did you think? Were you ticked off that this team was, you know, still probably had at least another run in them and that they decided, we're just going to completely dismantle it? What did you think about that?
Well, if you guys remember, that was the strike year coming up.
99, correct. Right.
At that time, that they were heading into the labor strike type of deal, and I knew they may not be a season. But I was hoping once they get that situated, then they would find out a way to bring Jordan and Scottie Pippen back. I knew Dennis Rodman was on his last leg. He was really hurt. He wasn't even a starter late in the season in 1998, and I knew Jordan really dragged them along. And he saw last night, guys. Scottie Pippen was hurting. He ended up having back surgery, okay? But the one thing I will say, they wouldn't have won it probably in 2000, but because it was a short season in 1999, if you bring Scottie Pippen back, Phil Jackson back, and Michael Jordan, you give them rest, there's no way that David Robinson and Tim Duncan are beating that Bulls team. That's not happening. But that would have probably been the only championship, and then that probably would have been it. These guys were the oldest team when they won it in 98. Right. So they were on this last leg. I know the what-if factor is there, but I just appreciate that they had 2 3-peats. Think about that, guys, man. They had 2 3-peats, and Michael Jordan was able to lead that. That's amazing.
Yep. I think I agree with you on that one. I think 99, yes. 2000, probably not, but it's a story you'll never know. We never got the opportunity.
Yep.
Jerry, really appreciate it, man. Thanks for coming on.
Jerry, thank you, and get that message over to Albert, okay, Jerry?
I promise you that. Good talking to you guys. Send me that message. I'll send it to Albert.
You got it.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry.
Ernie, get on that right now. Get that message over to Jerry. Tell him how much we love Albert and we want him on, that we're touting him for the Hall of Fame, how he got hosed out of the MVP in 95. You got to get on it. You got to get on it, Ernie.
It's funny. That was Jerry Hairston Jr., former longtime major leaguer, Jordan aficionado.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.